Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here. We're streaming live, by the way, on biz1190.com. And by the way, if you want to go to the iPhone's App Store and download the Biz1190 app, you can have the Atlanta's Business Radio with you wherever you go, including our program. Today's program will be podcast on iTunes and at eddiemayfield.com. And you'll find links there to our guest and for that matter, all the podcasts of various programs and so forth. So check us out there. Our guest today is Gary Mollica. Gary is the author of an interesting book called Afterworld, Escaping the Tyranny. We're going to talk with Gary not only about the book, but sort of about the process of writing a book, and then we'll talk a little bit about the difficulties and challenges of the business, I guess, of getting a book published. Gary, welcome to Driven to Business. Glad you're here.
Yeah, thank you, Eddie.
Gary, let's talk about you a little bit to start with. You're actually, in your real life, you're actually physician's assistant. You're an anesthesiologist here in Atlanta. You know, I've always, I think I was telling you before we went on the air, I have a good friend that's an anesthesiologist here in Atlanta, and I always told him, I kind of view what you guys do as magic. I've never had a major operation, but I have had this various tests, you know, where they put you under for the test and so forth, and it's always astonishing to me. They'll say, okay, Mr. Mayfield, you're going to do this, and then next thing you know, you're in the recovery. It's like a piece of your life's taken out. I know you're used to it, but I'm telling you, for guys that are not, it's like an otherworld experience or something.
Yeah. Well, it takes a lot of artwork to do it. People kind of read the book, and they feel like they can just go in there and take the doses and just do anesthesia, but it really is kind of an art form because every patient's different. Every operation's different. All your numbers change, and you kind of just do it from what you've learned over the years.
And again, we're not going to spend the whole program talking about medicine, but my friend, who's a long-time anesthesiologist, well-respected here in town, he tells me that we've talked about this before. He thinks the biggest advances in medicine were the discovery of antibiotics, and secondly, the development of anesthesia, which actually, of course, happened here in Georgia with Crawford Long, I believe, right. Yeah, yes. And all that. And because he said, you know, that those are the two things that have allowed everything else in medicine to progress. It is hard to imagine back in the old days before they had guys like you and we had the drugs we have now to put us. A trip to the hospital would be a pretty horrible experience if you had to have something done, seriously.
Yeah, especially in the Civil War.
Oh, you're not kidding. And I read a lot about that. It's like, it's just hard to imagine how everybody didn't die from it, frankly.
Right. That's understandable.
You hear stories about a guy would keep one bullet in his musket to keep the doctors away from him.
Yeah.
Gary, let's talk about your book, Afterworld, Escaping the Tyranny. I had to hurriedly read it over the weekend, as a matter of fact, for in preparation for the show today. It's an interesting book, and I'm always curious. I've never written a book. I've started a few and just never done it, but I've written a number of blogs, and I've written several magazine articles and things of that sort. Most of them are very technical in nature, so kind of short, you know, compared to what you do. But I'm always curious how people get motivated to write things, and I want to talk a little bit about some of the specifics of the book. But just in general, tell us about where this book came from in your life, and where did this whole idea come from?
Well, it started like 30 years ago. I moved from Seattle to Savannah for my job in anesthesia, and I didn't know anybody down there, and I just saw Star Wars, and you know, it was all I love the science fiction genre, and I thought, well, I can write a story like that, you know. So I just sat down and I just kind of started writing. And I really can't remember if I really put an outline together or not, but it got into being more chapters and more episodes, kind of like on what was happening in the book. And then it just all came together. And I actually shelved it for like 20 years because back then, you know, we didn't have a computer. We didn't have online printing companies. Publishing, you couldn't do self-publishing or anything, and you had to be in that circle in order to get your manuscript even read. So I kind of put it away, and about 10 years ago, a friend of mine, lived across the street actually, a good Christian friend of mine, was in the construction business, and he had a secretary, and he said, she'll type it up for me. And believe it or not, I don't even know how she read my handwriting. As you know, medical field people kind of handwriting is not very good.
Yeah, well, I'm not a doctor, but I bet you I have worse handwriting than you. Yeah.
But anyway, so she put it together and put it on a disc, and that kind of started the process of I found an editor, and then I kind of got it back and really felt that it needed to more than what he had offered me. So I kind of did a lot of the editing myself, and it kind of took about 7 years to get it all to the package that I have right now. But see, I have 6 kids and a beautiful wife, and she's helped me actually a lot through this, Joyce. You know, the Lord spoke through her a lot through this book. I guess he didn't understand or didn't think that I was going to, you know, listen, but it's easier for the Lord to speak through someone else when you listen rather than him just to tell you, I think.
He certainly speaks through my wife quite a bit. You know, I was just sitting here thinking, you know, with 6 kids, you have plenty of spare time, so I don't know why you didn't just go ahead and
finish. With that, I had 2 jobs. I've been working 2 jobs since 1997, and I took a lot of weekends, a lot of nights, a lot of patience from my wife and my kids, and it finally got to be the way it is, but it took a while.
I don't want to give away the entire plot because we want people to read the book. So without that, I'm having read it, I'm going to ask you some specifics later on about a couple of things in there. But give us the elevator talk on the book here, or whatever term that would be.
Yeah. Well, the story takes place after a nuclear war and the whole Earth is devastated. And there's several societies actually all around the world. That isn't explained in the book, but all around the world that are built up in the atmosphere. And
right.
These two that the book is involved with are two cities that are built up in the atmosphere. One's male, one's female, and they don't interact just at certain periods of time in their life to mate and bring offspring because they have to promote the society. So once these offspring are born, they're sent back to the prospective cities and they're raised by different people. So in the process of learning how to do this, there's 4 main characters. And when I wrote it, I kind of put myself in one of the main characters. It's kind of easier to write that way because, you know, you kind of live the part. But they fall in love with these 2 girls, and they're shipped back. So there's a process of escaping, rescuing the girls, you know, falling in love, and having to try to find a place where they can live as a family rather than in separate lives.
I found the part in there where you had the sexes totally separated. In fact, if I read it correctly, and you're telling us from the male's perspective, for the most part, not only did they live separately, they really didn't even know for sure there was another sex,
right?
And they didn't really know how people were created anyhow. It was like this. These people were completely like ignorant of the opposite sex. Completely ignorant.
The whole society was repressed. That's the only way that they felt they could bring about a perfect society. The whole point was to bring about a perfect society without crimes of passion, greed, lust, anything like that. So in order to have that society, they had to be repressed in a certain way, and I don't really want to tell you how it's done because it's part of the story, but they really don't know anything about the world or how anything happened. No history. They're just kind of in their own little world where they all get paid the same amount of money, so nobody has more than the other. They just have different things from the other, and they just live a life of kind of, I don't know what you would call it, but
It's certainly a very controlled life. I mean, it's a very controlled life. Like, you know, it's a bit that way. Now, Gary, you're a Christian writer, but you do deal with men-women relationships. And in fact, in a very odd sense, you know, when this man and this woman are put together, they've never seen each other. The guy's never seen a woman in his life. And she's never seen a male in his life, And then you have them getting together by governmental decree, getting together, right, and basically having sex. You know, I've often said, like I said, I've written a few things, none of them that I can think of that ever mentioned sex of any sort. Mine were always like either business things or technical type things. Right. But I've always thought about, you know, I wouldn't want to ever write anything that I'd be embarrassed for my mom to read.
Right, I understand that.
That's sort of the deal. And you're coming at this from a Christian perspective, and we may have to finish this conversation after the break, as a matter of fact, but how did you handle that? Because you do go into some detail here.
Well, I try to focus on the love story, which really involves more than sex. Sex is just a small part of the relationship you have with your wife, and you really have to build that relationship and really leave a lot of it to the imagination. I left a lot of that to the imagination because it's really different for every person. It's almost like anesthesia. Everything's different for every person. So, you know, I try to...
I've never heard sex compared to anesthesia, but that's a good idea.
So I try to get the relationship part started with friendship, with, you know, subtle touch, love, you know, stars. It all kind of goes into the romantic aspect of this love story. And you don't really need sex to have a love story written.
No.
You know, it's just a part that is really.
But in your case, these guys have never, again, from the guy's perspective, they've never seen a woman before,
right.
I mean, ever. Not drawings, not pictures, not ever.
Well, before they go to
a little training. That's
a little training that they had. So they kind of understand what it's like, but that really doesn't give them a perspective on the female character, just the way they feel, you know, they're not rugged and tough and, you know, they're soft and gentle and kind and, you know, so they don't really have all that characteristic part of it. And so you build the love story around their friendship, their relationship, and how you get started with any relationship with a woman.
That is an interesting part of the book, and it is very fast. The book is Afterworld, Escaping the Tyranny. We're talking with Gary Mollica. More to come on Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're here every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on Atlanta's Business Radio, Biz 1190 AM, streaming live, as I said earlier, on biz1190.com and podcast on iTunes and eddiemayfield.com. There's also, if you go to eddiemayfield.com, click on the blog page, you will also see a little blurb about Gary and about the program and about other guests and programs we've had here. Gary, we'll probably go back to the male-female thing in a little bit because it's a big part of your book there. But, you know, there are some, I don't know whether intended or unintended, you have some political overtones that we've sort of addressed a little bit already in the book. But tell us about that.
Well, the whole point of humanity is really, they really try to get a perfect society. And really, only God can, you know, give you that perfect society. But they're always striving for that perfect society. In order to do that, they really felt they had to separate the sexes and start over. That's really what they did after a nuclear war. And it was kind of planned before. There's a committee that really directs all this stuff, and they had to find out how they could control their emotions, their desire to, you know, get better, get more social status, and all that kind of stuff that we have. Actually, mostly our freedoms is what they wanted to control.
Right.
You know, and it all really kind of centers around a socialistic society. So they think that's the perfect society. But being human and with the way the Lord created us, he gave us the desire to be free and to, you know, have relationships and to have families and children. And that really kind of comes out as they go through history. There's one character in there who is kind of a computer genius, and he manipulates these computers to try to find information. And
it's interesting that you wrote this. I'm sure you've edited it since then, because, you know, back when you first started writing this, computers were not what they are now, as you've already said. So, you know, it's easy for, I think, for us to accept an artificial intelligence type situation now because we see it than we did perhaps back when you first started writing this.
Right. No, computers were they're kind of like in the science fiction genre, you know.
You're right.
So that's kind of where I developed the idea of him being able to manipulate it, even though they were controlled by another air committee.
Let's talk a little bit about the mechanics, and I want to come back and talk about the book more in a moment, but the mechanics of getting a book published. I have a number of friends that some of whom successfully have had books published, some of whom have not had books published. I don't know if it's harder to do that today than before. It's always been hard. But it's certainly a competitive world, isn't it?
Yes, very, very competitive. In fact, like I was saying before, you have to be in that circle to, you know, get your manuscript even read. But nowadays, you can, you know, get it on a file, upload it to an online printing company, and, you know, there's a process of getting a book cover. I got that through a friend of my son's, actually, who is in video and editing, and this was the first cover he ever did. It came out perfect. But so you can get the cover, you can get the content, you can put it online and get it printed, and they can send you a physical book like I have right here.
Right.
But the whole problem with self-published books is that it's very hard to market.
Right.
I sent 7 or 8 books to different Christian publishers and didn't even get a response, probably from only one or two that I could remember. And they just don't, I don't know what the problem with a self-published book is, but even for them to market it would be great for self-publishers. I mean, there are people like me and ordinary people that, you know, have a desire to, you know, do something different. And you can't really get it in the marketplace because you can go to Target or Walmart and they won't put a self-published book on the shelf.
You know, a couple of my friends that have done that, like I say, some successfully, some not successfully. One guy I'm thinking of in particular, now this was a Christian genre book that he wrote having to do with church, church governmental type things, actually. And he actually ended up going to a lot of, in business, I would call it a trade show. I don't think they call it that.
Right.
Like a conference, I guess would be a better term. And he would actually put a booth at the conference, and he got other, in his case, his market, his target market was pastors and other people in church leadership positions. And so that's how he marketed. So he did it that way. Others I know have self-published books, but they will get somebody, through some way or another, they get somebody interested in it. And it's kind of like, I think, people that make independent films or independent music, they do it independently and do it themselves, but somewhere along the line, a big boy picks it up.
Right.
And that's how it ends up happening. Mm-hmm. And I think of it in terms of selling anything, like selling even the products at our company, EMA. You know, it's identifying who your market is and how to get to them. That's a science all into itself in every way.
Right. You know, that's real interesting. And, you know, I've seen the Lord work in great ways. Like, I had nothing to do with this book being, you know, coming to interview here at all. And he's just kind of put people in my path. And I don't think anything's going to get marketed or sold or produced or made into a movie or anything unless the Lord directs that. He's really in control of everything. And it really is kind of fascinating to me that I had nothing to do with this. And it just came about. So I know he can do that, and it's all in his hands. So I look forward to him to do the marketing in some way. You know, I'll follow his will and his way to do it. He just has to show me how to do it.
You know, for others that might want to, in my experience, I'm always interested in how somebody else does. Not that you're going to copy them necessarily, but I'm always interested in how they did it. And you've already said to this that you said you didn't do a firm outline, at least, but you must have had in your head, or did you start off with just sort of a glimmer of an idea, and it just, and as you sat down and began writing, the story just kind of unfolded,
it's kind of hard to remember that far back. It was 30 years ago.
Right.
But, you know, I have, thought about a sequel, and I wrote out an outline, and I had, you know, so many chapters, and I had so many titles of each chapter, and then I fill in the content. That's kind of how I would do it this time.
Right.
The next book, if the Lord wants me to write it, it really, you know, depends on Him and my work schedule and if there's time, but it would really bring out the relationship between Christ and the characters, because that's really the most important thing on Earth here, really. Everything is destroyed. You know, anything you have, all the material things are destroyed. People are so materialistic these days.
Right.
They don't realize the longevity of the relationship with Christ, with, you know, your family members, you know, and your wife. We're all going to be together. And, you know, having your direction on the relationship with Christ, really kind of doing his will, can, you know, just make your life worth living, and he guides it all through your life. It's just a great experience to see how he works.
I was actually going to ask you about that a little later in the program. You know, you've written a book. I was trying to think what your book reminded me of, and I hope this is not offensive. I was thinking of science fiction things like the Star Trek or perhaps the Matrix, you know, the movie The Matrix and that kind of a thing. But and not that there's a big game where they're trying to kill anybody in it, but I think the setting of the book reminds me a little bit of The Hunger Games. It's like it's the same kind of society. Uh-huh. It's just controlled very, very, very tightly. Now, in The Hunger Games, they don't separate men and women, but it's a very tightly controlled society that a few people make the decisions for everybody, and most people don't question them, no matter how inane those decisions are. And yet, you know, we're in our society, and I'd like to talk to you about this after the break. You know, in our society, there's sort of a post-apocalyptic world idea is actually quite popular now in terms of both television and movies and books. You know, things like was filmed here in Atlanta, The Walking Dead, for instance, which is an interesting, it's a phenomenon. It's interesting to me that in our day and age, because, you know, that whole zombie thing came back from, you know, The Night of the Living Dead, which came out when we were kids, you know, black and white movie, and yet that somehow still exactly what we're doing. We'll talk about that after the break. You're listening to Driven to Business. More to come with Gary Malika. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're talking with Gary Malika, Sr. Gary is the author of Afterworld, Escaping the Tyranny. Gary, when he's not writing books, is a physician's assistant, an anesthesiologist, making people feel good where they're having things, all kind of things done to them here in Atlanta. Gary, right before the break, I was talking to you about the idea of this interest in our time, or at least where people seem to find interest in things like The Hunger Games, the movies, and then Walking Dead, and sort of these scenarios where society just falls apart on us. I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts about why people find that fascinating or interesting.
Well, people find evil very fascinating. If you notice,
that's
all
a good
the
point.
Movies are, you know, people killing people. That's really, it's a man thing. It's a, you know, it's a macho thing, and people seem to really like to see evil. And the apocalypse really is the end time. And in the end time, evil is always, you know, overrun by good.
Right.
And there's that innate, you know, God-given desire for good to be, you know, better than evil. So I think that people really want to see good overcome evil, and it kind of puts everything in perspective at the end, because the Lord's going to take care of all the evil in the world. So, you know, that innate created desire that we have from God that things should be good and people should be, you know, happy and not killing people and not, you know, having all this destruction and stuff really is, you know, exciting and entertaining to them. So
I wonder if it's also in some ways a reaction to the materialism that we, you know, we all are so, all of us really are quite materialistic, and in particular here in the United States. And I think maybe just innately we know how shallow that is, even though we all, you know, none of us would probably willingly get rid of any of it, but we sort of somehow in our inner being, we know that's not really very satisfying. And I think maybe there's some realization of how fragile we are. Here, I make my living in the electrical world, you know, electronic motor drives, and so I'm completely dependent on, my entire career is dependent on electricity. Actually, just about everybody's is, even whether they know it or not. I mean, our entire lives in this country are so electrical. It's beyond, it's hard to imagine life without. But we're so, I think we live a little closer to the edge than many of us think we do. And, you know, and you know, you're referring to Christian ideas. You know, if you go back and look in the Old Testament where they were just living completely happy, if not happy, certainly content lives, and bam, all of a sudden the barbarians are at the gate, and you know, it's, you know, it's a giant city like Nineveh, which is where is Mosul in Iraq now, but you know, it is wiped off the face of the earth. You know, the probably the largest city in the face on earth at that time is just gone, just boom, completely eradicated. I think we know somehow, even we don't consciously know it. I think maybe we subconsciously know that, and maybe that's why we find, when we look at books or movies where everything is just gone, maybe that appeals to us somehow. Yeah. I don't know why that is, but and we said, now you're, now I should say your book is not completely like that. These people aren't living in terms of materialism. They appear to be doing pretty well, actually.
Yeah. Well, I think people do have their priorities kind of miskewed these days. You know, like I said, everything goes away, everything's destroyed. You can't take anything with you to the grave. I mean, the only thing you have is your spiritual life with Christ, and you know, your family who eventually you'll see, who, you know, get to heaven and stuff. So you really have to get your priorities straight, and when you do that, the Lord, and you get, you try to do His will in your life. I mean, it just goes to show that, who would you want to run your life but someone who created the universe?
Right.
I mean, I can't do it better than Him. I don't think anybody could. So He could really give you all these things, like He says in the Bible. He, you know, He gives you the desires of your heart, but you have to be in His will and know that His will is the best for your life. So if you get your priorities straight and not want everything but want that relationship, then I think He is good enough and kind enough and loves us enough, more than, you know, anybody can love you, that He gives you these things.
You know, in the book, in the Afterworld, you had already alluded to that you made a few changes in Escaping the Tyranny. There is a, I've overused the word overtone here. I don't mean to, I don't know why I can't think of a better word, but there are spiritual overtones. It's not especially an in-your-face kind of spirituality, but there's a spiritual overtone in this. Tell us about that. I'm sure it's purposeful when you talk.
Yeah, it started out to be a secular book. I had no intention of putting anything Christian in it. And actually, as my wife started reading it, she was really, he really spoke through her to where things can be inserted in the book.
Right.
And it was amazing how there was certain places where it just all fit in. And she was reading, she goes, hey, the gospel, it'll fit in right here. So I had some help with that part, and the guy that helped me gave you the three definitions of love and then explained how Christ died for our sins and you know, rose from the dead, which is really where all our belief comes from, is His risen body from the dead. Nobody's done that, and nobody will ever do that. So the Father raised Him from the dead. That's where we get our belief and our trust in Him. So she found a place for that, and then I found places where I just kind of mentioned the Bible. There's a place where he prays. He's in destitute. He wants to know what to do, and he prays, and there's a reference to the Creator and things that even after everything's destroyed, they find a place that is really beautiful. So there's a lot of reference to Christian theology, but the most important part was, it explains what really Christ did for us.
You know, I was having not talked to you at all, but just reading the book, I was a little struck with when the man and woman meet, or at least one of the men and women meet for the first time. There's a bit, I don't think you do it, I don't think you do it openly, but there's a bit of a an Adam and Eve undertone to that, or it appears to be. I'm curious if that's on purpose, or that's just the way it worked out.
Well, it's interesting. You know, you have to try to put yourself in his place and her place of never even seeing the opposite sex.
Right.
And it's hard. I leave a lot of that to the imagination. It's hard for me to really say everything that I want to say. But, you know, as my mind goes through it, I kind of put bits and pieces in there to, you know, show his excitement, his curiosity, his desire, and just let the audience run with what they want to make out of it, because that's really the gift that God gives you. It's that special thing. And
well, I had sort of thought that, that's what Adam had to think when God said, here's here's Eve. Like,
it's a special gift, and, you know, everybody's gift is different, so... It is amazing that a God that great can make everybody's gift different, which is unique.
That is a good deal. There's a bit in the book. You give both some real and some fictional history, and you involve Russia in there. And you know, I've been to Russia not too long ago, and the president of Putin is in the news. President Putin is in the news quite a bit now, and some of the news actually has begun, some of them very openly, some of them kind of casually, comparing him to Stalin in some ways. Now, that's probably a bit of an unfair comparison, actually.
Yeah, but I really think that. You know, Stalin should be compared with Hitler. I mean, he killed,
murdered millions
of his own people.
Totally evil,
it's awful. And, you know, Putin has that same philosophy of, you know, a socialist society, but he's not as vindictive and, you know, I think not as insane as Stalin or Hitler were, because, you know, killing people is just not what you do for your country, even if you believe in socialist society.
You know, it's been in the news recently. There's been a couple of guys disappeared over there. So, but from your perspective, you know, you basically have got, again, not to give away the plot of the book, but mm-hmm. Russia does kind of figure, at least in the when they're talking about what happened on Earth, Russia does play.
Well, they won the war.
Yes.
You know, because they built these societies that are socialistic.
Right.
So that's kind of more what I allude to in the book, that, you know, everybody thinks, oh, the United States, most powerful, they're going to win everything. Well, they don't win this war.
Right.
But they win in the end. And I'm not going to tell you the end because that's...
Yep. But you know, it's... You know, when fiction duplicates life, or life duplicates fiction, is however you want to put that. But you know, all through history, the obvious people that should have won a war haven't always. You know, the stronger societies have been knocked off. It's a David Goliath thing. You know, where that is true all the way back through there. You know, you'd already mentioned about possibly having a sequel. Are you considering that very seriously? Just something in the back of your mind? Or?
Well, I wrote up an outline, and I have the chapters kind of... I don't have the content in the chapters, but I have 12 or 13 chapters that I would write about. But like I said, it really depends on what the Lord really moves me to do, because it's all in His hands now. And if there was another book, it would definitely really put a strong emphasis on the relationship you have with your Creator, with Christ.
Exactly. Let's talk about, you know, you written a book, and obviously the consumer of a book is someone that must read a book as compared. Now, your book could also be turned into a movie. That's something that could happen, of course.
That'd be great.
But you need to talk to Isaac over here about that. But the... does it disturb you at all, just in general, that we Americans seem to be, if we're reading very casually, it appears to me. Is that?
Well, there's a lot of distractions. You know, you have television, video games, radios, and I think people still, in order to gain knowledge, real, true knowledge, they have to read.
Right.
And you read so much to get knowledge, but then there's that other thing, you know, that entertainment part that your imagination runs with you. Your imagination can't run with television or video games, but your imagination can run in a book.
I think that is why that, and I know nothing about except what I read about this, but the idea that you know, reading stimulates a different part of your brain, and it's a good part of your brain to stimulate. We'll be right back talking with Gary Mollica in just a moment. Stick around. I'm Eddie Mayfield. You're with Driven to Business. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield, your host. Glad that you're here. We're talking with Gary Malika, the author of Afterworld, Escaping the Tyranny. The conversation's kind of going all over the place, as they usually do, and try to keep them interesting. But, you know, we've talked about Gary's sort of motivation for writing the book, a little bit about the process of writing it, and some about the difficulties of selling this particular product, I guess would be the way I'd put it, and getting it published and out in front of people. I mean, remind you that you'll find links to Gary and his book on eddiemayfield.com. You can go there and check it out. There's also a link to Gary's book on Amazon and where else,
Gary? That's the main marketing tool I'm using now.
Okay, yeah, so go there and check that out. Gary, right before the break, we were talking about reading. It's a confession from me. I blame it on remote controls, so just, you know, anything but blame me. The whole
point. We all have those.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I will now watch three TV shows at a time, you know, which is absurd, really, but you do that. But I also find myself these days, I will sometimes be reading three books at a time. And, again, I blame it on the remote control. It probably is because I have the attention span of a gnat now, and you others really got it down. But, you know, the point of reading, I think I was a big reader as a kid. And early in my life, in my early business life, I was living in Texas, and another friend of mine and I, we decided to become very disciplined readers. And every quarter, and we read each together, we would read a business book of some sort by somebody. We would read an inspirational book of some sort, usually by some pastor or something. We would read that. And then we would read a classic. This was every quarter. We read discipline about this. And, you know, so we read Huckleberry Finn, and we read Robinson Crusoe, and we read A Tale of Two Cities, and we read Les Miserables, all of which are very long books if you read if you read those books. But, you know, we sort of forced ourselves into that discipline, and it does give some discipline to your life. I'm not as good about that as I used to be, and now I tend to read either I'll get interested in something and read a lot about it, and then I'll back off and stop being interested. Are you a reader? Do you read a lot?
Well, my wife's actually the reader in my family. Joyce has we have one 26-foot wall in our house just full of books. She loves to read. I read a lot in college. Anesthesia is really kind of boring. It kind of puts you to sleep. After I got out of college, I'm kind of a person who likes to use his hands and stuff. I'm not really much of a reader, but I like to use my imagination. That really is how you really get into a book is you know having your imagination run away with you. So I think that's probably why I wrote the book. I kind of did it mainly not to publish it or anything, just to give it to my kids as something like a goal that I reached.
Right.
You know, and have them read it and see what they thought. But I'm not really much of a reader.
That surprised me because, you know, I think a lot of authors are. Now maybe that could be good and bad. It may be bad in that you start copying what you've already read somewhere, which is not, you know, a good idea at all. But, you know, you do hear stories in the United States of the late Tom Clancy, for instance, you know, who was an insurance salesman.
Books. Yeah.
And just began writing books at his kitchen table, as the story goes. And I don't know the story of how he got published to start with. I read his first book was his best book, you know, The Hunt for Red October. I thought it was a fabulous book. And
a great movie, too.
Yes. And he spent a lot of time. He just did an enormous amount of research to make you feel like you are in that submarine, and it's all going the way it is. And I think I'd mentioned to you earlier that my writing tends to be technical for the field that I'm in. It's as boring as I almost said as boring as anesthesia. And I did not mean to say that because I'm very glad you guys do what you do. Very, 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 very glad you guys do what you do. So it would bore me because I wouldn't understand it at all. It would be the problem with it. Are you in general, optimistic about the American society? Are you worried about it?
Well, that's a good question, actually. I think I really believe in the system because if it's not working for you for a certain period of time, you go out there and vote. You get other people in there. And we really, right now, we need godly men in there to lead us. And our country is kind of taking God out of the picture. And it's really disturbing because, you know, he really is in control of everything. And like I said before, you know, with him being in control of, you know, your military, your politics, your values, you know, you're going to have a great country. And when you take that away, it's going to, things are going to happen like they're happening now. You know, right. People are discouraged. You know, there's no right and wrong. It's all gray. You have to please everybody. It's not the way it was meant to be. I mean, there's always a right and wrong. And now, you know, if you have a right, you know, people say you're prejudiced, you know. So
I think that is pushed on us a bit. I don't know that people, actually, your average person buys into it. And you have to be careful because, you know the worst thing you can call, particularly a younger person these days, is to say they're a bigot or something. I mean, that is the right. Curse of all curses to get somebody. And so they don't really ever appear to be a bigot. Right. So they will give you these mamby-bamby answers. But, you know, like there was a news story just today, as a matter of fact, about a city who could propose an ordinance saying that you couldn't stop people from going into the opposite sex's restroom. But now there may be some city council people and others that think that's good, but I promise you, if you go ask your average guy, is that a good idea? They're all going to say that's a ridiculous idea. And it's not that we don't know which restroom we should be in. It's absurd. We all know that. A 5-year-old knows that. That's not a problem. But somehow in society, we almost purposely make ourselves ridiculous.
Right.
I think in an attempt to...
I think a lot of people are just uninformed. And, you know, this is probably not a very nice thing to say, but, you know, we're lied to a lot these days. And people don't think that that's wrong. And it's hard when, you know, people lie and say things that are not true, and then without being informed and understanding or looking it up yourself, they believe it. So, you know, then things get skewed, and right now becomes wrong, and wrong becomes non-existent. And, you know, you just have all these policies and regulations, you know, just to please other people.
I think it's mental laziness on the part of a lot of us. It's just
that's true. Very
don't,
true.
That bothers me to think about it. So I'm just not going to think about it, you know? And so
I'm going to listen to what he has to say, and I'm just going to go with that.
Right.
They're not going to look into it. They're not going to try to get informed, you know? And it's sad that people aren't,
you know, going back to Russia and Stalin a minute, you know, I've read a biography of Stalin recently. And one of the fascinating things in there is that people in the gulags being led to death were still saying, if only Joe knew about this, he would, you know, they're there because he ordered them there, and somehow they're still got this idea that if only he knew what was going on here, this would be stopped, when in fact he ordered them there. Yeah. I mean, it's just people can make up these absurd mental pictures of reality and distort them, and it's almost willful ignorance, or it's just not thinking at all. And I do think that's one of the problems that we do have. Gary, you've already sort of said this, but in about a minute, tell us again, in your life, your motivation, what's important to you? I think I can answer this for you, but let's hear you say it.
Well, the most important thing to me is my relationship with Christ. And then it follows down, you know, my wife, my children, my grandchildren, my family and friends. But, you know, we were really created to give praise, honor, and glory to the Father. And, you know, when man fell, the Father had a redemption plan right in place, and it all involved his son, Jesus Christ, dying on the cross. But not just dying on the cross is where it really is important. The important part is that he was raised from the dead, and that's what gives us our belief. That's what gives us our strength and our trust, and trusting in him to work out my life is important to me. And, you know, that's the only thing that's going to last forever. And it's really said well in John 3:16. You know, he says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that so whoever would believe in him will not perish and have everlasting life." And that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for an everlasting life with a God who loves me, and I'll see my family there, my friends, and you know, that's the most important thing. Well, everything's going to be gone. Except for that.
Gary, you're a great guy. Thanks for coming on the program. The book is Afterworld, Escaping the Tyranny. Go to Amazon, check it out. We'll see you here next week. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Goodbye.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.